John Batchelor, celebrating good news from Europe. The news is economic, but then again, it lifts everybody's heart. The EU grew more than expected for the first quarter, led by Germany reviving itself, having spent some time negative or near too negative. The growth is moving in the right direction for perhaps the ECB, but certainly for people writing headlines. And I welcome Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's based in Berlin, to say that we're going to address the war, of course, but the economic conditions have been a part of the conflict for the last 2 years. And this is a moment to celebrate only because there'll be other bumps in the road ahead. Judy, a very good day to you. I don't know. It looks good from this side of the water. How does it look in Berlin to have a surprise to the positive about the growth? Good evening to you.
Hey, good evening, John. Thank you for having me on the show. Well, everybody is a little bit cautious and they're not over the moon. A lot of the big retail department stores have shut down, 17 or 20 throughout Germany, and there's been a lot of loss of jobs. But I think the atmosphere here is cautious, given inflation and also given that people aren't spending that much, but we're waiting to see more figures coming out. The good news is that unemployment is very low. Employment is quite high. So this is a good factor into the German economy. And the downside is, of course, as ever, that Germany is way behind in digitization and dealing with industrialization and how to deal with China. But maybe this is a nice little fillip for the coalition, which is in the doldrums at the moment.
Yes, I marvel that a political coalition can think like me. Whenever I solve a problem, I immediately look around for something to worry about. So, okay, fine. We go now to what is to worry about, which is the unfinished Ukraine mystery. The news is that the U.S. Congress organized itself and vouchsafed a $61 billion rescue package divided into pieces, not all of it for weapons, some of it financial aid, some of it cooperation between the U.S. and Ukraine. However, all Europe was waiting to see if the Congress would move. It did, and you have asked the question of your colleagues that now that we have the U.S. in hand, does the speech made by President Macron signify a change of direction for Ukraine, for European Union? The way you ask it is, will President Macron's vision for European defense gain traction? I read from your colleagues' comments, and the one that has attracted me the most to put a canopy on this is strategic autonomy, strategic autonomy. What does that mean to the European Union, Judy? Thank you.
Oh, if we only knew. President Macron wants a Europe that has an autonomy in terms of defense that can create its own decisions. This is the first thing. Strategic autonomy has been very woolly and vague for several years since Macron brought us up. But I've got to be fair to President Macron. None of the European countries have actually put meat onto this and say, well, listen, what does this mean? What does strategic mean? And what does autonomy mean? And they're all afraid of it. Why? Because they've become intellectually so lazy and also politically so dependent on the United States to provide the security cover that has provided with Europe since 1945. But Macron, who has a very good antennae for the changes taking place in the United States and the geopolitical changes as well, is repeating his plea that Europe really, really, really must get a strategic autonomy together. This will not happen unless the defense industries in Europe stop being fragmented, start cooperating, and start understanding that what's at stake is the security of its citizens.
Christoph Bladowski, visiting adjunct professor at the Rostov University of Information Technology and Management, provides a cold water on this. Let's see what you're worth. He acknowledges that Mr. Macron has reversed himself from earlier in the war when he spent time in Moscow or on the phone with Vladimir Putin. But he wants to see practical steps. Why? Something you've written about, Judy, the rise of the so-called hard right, splinter parties that are gaining attention from the electorate, not just in Germany, but across the European Union. However, Mr. Bladowski also says that Germany's alone in the way it's treating the war right now. What does he mean by that, to your understanding? Alone, how is Germany?
Chancellor Scholz hasn't made the big leap, the big language leap, to say that Ukraine must win. Yes, Scholz praises Germany has provided all these weapons and everything else to Ukraine, but he won't make the leap to say that Ukraine will win. Why? Because he sees the whole connection with Russia still intrinsic to the Social Democratic Party. And also, he's now coming up to the European Parliament elections that will take place in June. He's running this peace campaign. I'm the peace chancellor and so on. But I think Germany actually should be the leader in Europe and with the support of the United States, really push this war to its ultimate conclusion. And Chancellor Scholz is not willing to do this.
Mr. Bladowski also asks a very hard question. Is Europe ready to trade social programs for rearmament?
No, it isn't, because it's a really great question. It isn't because it doesn't see the reason why. And it doesn't see the reason why because Russia's attack on Ukraine really hasn't actually punctured the comfort zone in Europe, across Europe. And if there's a real problem in Europe in terms of war, escalation of it, the dynamics might change. And despite the huge amounts of refugees that are given shelter here in Germany and in Poland and in other EU countries, the Europeans still don't make this this connection. And so it's a comfort zone that is actually quite complacent, and it'll be quite dangerous when it comes to actually understanding what defense and security about Europe is about.
I go immediately then to Kate Bond, Secretary General of the Norwegian Atlantic Committee, reminding us that General Secretary Stoltenberg of the NATO says the EU cannot defend Europe. Is that accurate, Judy? And is that understood in Berlin? You're helpless without NATO and the US.
That's completely accurate. The EU cannot defend Europe. The EU doesn't have an army. By the way, NATO doesn't have an army. It is member states that have armies. But the EU isn't coughing up its defense capabilities to defend its citizens. And this is about the security of Europe, but also it's about the security and the victory of Ukraine, which is on the borders of Poland, an EU and NATO member. But this is completely right. The EU is not up to it, and there isn't a strong debate about it. And there isn't a strong debate about it. It comes from the debate has been started by Macron a couple of years ago, but Germany under Chancellor Olaf Scholz will not deal with this. He wants to be the peace chancellor, and it's quite astonishing that Germany won't actually take the leading role in why Europe needs a very, very strong and cohesive and coherent security and defense policy.
More cold water. This is from John Denny, research professor at U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute. That's the think tank for the Joint Chiefs. He says, one, it's unlikely it'll gain traction because show me, he insists, show me, man from Missouri. He also questions France's outreach and posture towards the Eastern Wing that you've spoken of with great detail. And he also questions the overly nationalized and segmented defense industry. You've mentioned that. These are strong doubts, Judy. Are they being addressed?
It should be addressed. They've been discussing this for years, John, for several years, about ending this fragmentation, about getting a coherent defense structure. The defense lobbies in the individual countries are just so strong. I have no idea how this is going to change, but Macron knows this has to change. Scholz is a bit mealy-mouthed about this. But if Europe wants to defend itself, it really has to get a coherent defense industry strategy in place. And it is still not doing it, despite all the conflicts that are raging around the European Union.
Let me introduce a voice outside looking in. This is the foreign minister of Moldova. Recently, he was in Washington talking to dignitaries and journalists, and I spoke to one of the men who wrote up his comments. They were simple, straightforward. We're on Putin's target list. This is Moldova, the Eastern Wing that you've spoken of in the past. Does Berlin believe that? Does Paris believe it? That Putin is shopping for the Soviet Empire because Moldova believes it?
Well, I know you're talking about Nicu Popescu.
Yes.
A very talented diplomat and a very, very interesting person who doesn't throw out these statements just for sound bites. And he's actually right. The advisors in the various departments in Paris and Germany see this, but do their advice actually percolate up to the top, to the ministries and the chanceries? And I'm not so sure about this. There's an element of lip service and economic assistance and so on. I think Popescu is saying that the European Union, particularly Germany and France, should be much more robust in their support for and their language and understanding what is at stake if actually Ukraine loses.
One more detail, and I'm doing a lot of cold water because we can go along with the program that all's well. And I started that way, but the last one is, does the presidential contest come up when you talk about Europe having its own army? The choice between the status quo ante, Mr. Biden, and the previous status quo ante, Mr. Trump. Is that a factor in this debate?
John, this is so interesting, this question, because the Europeans don't want to know about a European army. There's a kind of pacifist element in some countries, particularly Germany. There's a non-threat perception, especially in the southern countries, Spain, Portugal, and Greece. The Nordics understand it completely, but they have totally tight individual defense apparatuses. But it's not a debate coming up. And the Europeans don't want to discuss it, and European leaders, except for Macron, doesn't want to discuss it. At the end of the day, Germany doesn't want to discuss any of these strategic issues, and that's the big downside of European security and NATO.
I'm getting the sense that Mr. Scholz is articulately silent in many languages. I understand he doesn't want to talk about it. So let's go to the war. I'm speaking to Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. We're discussing the Macron presentation of strategic autonomy. That means arms and more, combined arms and combined programs. However, there is immediately the $61 billion on its way to Ukraine. And when we come back, is it enough? This is CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.